annual meeting of the water, of your water company. And could I ask you to please stand and join me in the pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Just a couple of housekeeping things. You're going to hear a series of presentations this morning. They're more of an update to some projects we've been working on over the last 3 to 4 years. And I'll ask that you save all your questions to the presenters you're through, if you would. There's cardstock and pens and pencils over on the table. Write the question down so you don't forget. Some people don't like to stand up at a public meeting and ask a question. Give me the question, I'll take care of it privately if that's what you're choosing. Also, we'd like to collect your email address. It's important for a number of reasons, the least of which is that as we move forward on our project, within 2 or 3 years you'll see a change in the billing process. And we plan to eventually go to electronic bill pay or online billing. So we need your email address for that as we get ready for it. We need your email address to communicate with you, to tell you what's going on with the project. If you don't have email, let us know. We'll communicate with you in a snail mail way. We plan to use Nextdoor, I know you're fans of that, to keep you informed, again, where the project is and where it's going, the neighborhoods we're working in, any street closures, any disruptions, and so forth and so on. I would anticipate, and you'll hear more specifics this morning, that this huge capital improvement project that we've been talking about for a couple of years is going to kick off by the end of this month, and it's going to take two and a half years to complete. It's a huge endeavor. We have, as you know, we've gone out through a rather involved bidding process. You'll hear about that this morning, and we have a bidder that was chosen last week. We're going through a vetting process, and which is a fancy word with, you know, continue your patience with us. We're looking at the company to make sure that they have the sustainability, and it certainly appears they do, to carry out the project. I want to take a moment and introduce to you the people that are on the board, at least the ones that are here, to give you a sense of who we are and what our backgrounds are and what do we bring and why we're involved. Or you might ask the question, well, why, if he comes from that part of the world, why in the earth is he involved in the water company? Well, we're all volunteers, and occasionally I'm asked, what kind of compensation do you receive? We don't receive anything, nor do we ask for. I pay a water bill like everybody else. No, I don't get paid mileage to come to the meetings. Yes, I live here part-time. So the first person is down on the end, who's quietly looking out the window. He's what we call a pinch hitter. Jay Bretthauer is a full-time resident of Arnold. Stepped up when we had a vacancy on the board. We'll be finishing out that vacant term until June of next year, and is certainly welcome to run again. I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek. He's already told me he's not going to. I can certainly understand why. His educational background is from the Bay Area at San Jose State. He was a lifetime educator in the Palo Alto School District. Brings a real sense of stability to the board. He's also on the county's search and rescue team. Andy Rich, also works in search and rescue, and he owns his own business, and his role in life is to work on businesses that are not doing well. Fortunately, we are doing well. And fortunately, Andy keeps eyes on what works well for us and reminds us what is not. Lee Bateman is our treasurer. Lee has an extensive background at California State University at East Bay. He used to be Cal State Hayward. He was a chief financial officer there, brings an acumen of numbers and financing principles that we can understand, or certainly are endeavoring to do so. Sharon Tobias. Sharon is a registered, licensed civil engineer and has provided invaluable service to us at this point, working with the civil engineers that are working on the project. It's always best to have someone, when you're deep into a project like this, that speaks that particular language. Paul Penny?
Not here.
Not here. Okay. On this side, Tom Schneider. Tom is the chair of the Long Range Planning Committee. That was established a few years ago because we were in dire need of strategic planning and the importance of looking into the future, which I offer to you. We already have one foot in it. He comes from the aerospace background, currently chairs Long Range Planning, and you'll be hearing from him this morning. Dave Hicks, the general manager of the water company, has been with the company 31 years and has probably forgotten more than most of us will ever learn. Lee Schmeeds. Lee handles all of our money in the office and keeps the office as best we can running. Now we have about 2,800 customers. Just about everybody pays their water bill. If you can imagine, in any business, there are always a few that don't. We have a due process system. Lee is on top of that to help people that are struggling or those that, in some cases, have an attitude they just don't want to pay. I'll also tell you they're not getting any water. Next is Pan Bowman. Pan comes from the local school district, is used to dealing with parents. There's a sign on the wall that says, every child must be accompanied by an adult. I just offered to you, I think that's backward. But Pam has exhaustively worked with a number of our customers that have had some issues, and we're very appreciative of that. Lastly, Michael Minkler. Michael is our counsel, handles all of our legal affairs, contracts. The last time we were in litigation, we prevailed, thanks to him. He comes from the firm of Park Minkler, Minkler and now Minkler. Do I have the number of Minklers correct?
As of 6 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, that was as of a week ago. So that gives you a little sense of who we are and the work we are doing. And we have a couple of matters we have to take care of. One has to do with the election process. If you voted, thank you.
Yeah.
If you voted for me, thank you. If you voted, if you didn't vote for me, my wife thanks you. I promised I would say that. So without further ado, please welcome Andy Rich.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Andy.
So, as Bob indicated, as Director of Elections, I'm here to, first of all, talk about whether or not we have a quorum present. So a quorum is a minimum number of voting members necessary to conduct business. This number is calculated by subtracting the number of delinquents, juvenile or other, the number of which is 16, from the total number of shareholders, which is 2,030. So the resulting number is 2,014 eligible votes. So 25% of this number is what is needed for a quorum, which is 504, and as of this morning we have 570, so we do have a quorum present. And now for the voting results. Drum roll. First of all, I'd like to congratulate Bob McGinnis. His wife, I don't think, is here this morning, so I'm not going to be tarred and feathered, I guess. But he is elected for another three-year term, along with a new board member, Jeff Jones, who's not here this morning. So that's your board going into this next year. And I guess the last piece of business I have is I'd like to remind the our board directors that we have a meeting immediately following this, you know, to elect our officers for next year. So, thank you. I would ask that if there are any changes or additions to the minutes of our annual meeting of June 3rd, 2017. And hearing none, I need a motion to accept the minutes. Would you please stand and give your name and lot number? We have to do this lot number. And
okay. My name is Roger Mosley. I live at 1921 Genie Drive, 647-5.
Excellent. And a second? Now, nobody goes home until we get a second.
Genie Moltoff,
7325.
Okay. On the basis of the minutes, all in favor say by aye.
Aye.
And opposed say nay. Is there anyone that chooses not to vote? Thank you. Next is the President's report. Somewhat I've already given to you. The project is going to be off and running, as I mentioned. We're very pleased with the successful bidding process. Specifically, I want to thank Sharon Tobias and the engineers from MC Engineering who are with us this morning. You'll hear from them. They did a magical, outstanding effort on getting the bidding process prepared in a particular language that bidders could understand. We're appealing to a rather narrow band of contractors. We are looking for people that are specifically and that have done work with water and water companies and water projects. And we're very, very pleased with what has come forward to us. We're going to be getting the message out, as I mentioned, as best as we can. We'll be identifying, of course, the contractors to you. As they reach out and bring in subcontractors, people doing plumbing work, for example, need some electricians. Electricians may come from the local workforce. As that happens, we will let you know who they are. And remind yourselves and tell your neighbors that if anyone comes to your door while this project is going on and says they'd like to look at your waterworks in the house or check something, tell them, you'll let them know in a few minutes. Close the door, call us, and call the Sheriff's Department. Projects like this draw people that we don't want in the neighborhood. That's the bottom line. Now, I give you a little hint of what my background is. I came out of law enforcement in Alameda County, and I can tell you there are people around that just love to feed off of projects like this. I don't want to set us up for the fact that everybody's a bad guy, but there are bad guys out there. Next presentation comes from Lee Bateman, who is our current treasurer, on our financial state.
Dave, that's me.
No, he doesn't.
General manager.
Next presentation comes from the general manager, who will introduce Lee Bateman, who is our.
Well, let me start by putting the gavel over there. Let me start by introducing our field crew. We have three people in the field. One is not here today, but we have Bill Heinley, and Ethan Rector. Phil is the head treatment plant operator and distribution system operator. Ethan is our newest guy. He passed the state distribution operator's test and has recently taken the state water treatment plant operator's test. All our field crew have to be state certified. They have to take continuing education classes and renew their licenses every 3 years. And we have someone at work every day of the week. And an on-call system for after hours. So if any of you have problems day or night, you could call our emergency number or our office number, and one of these guys will be out to help you. You see water leaks, it's good to if you think it's a leak, it doesn't have to be one. If you think it is, call it in, we'll take care of it. But that's our guys there, and we have our engineers are represented here with John Pedry and Rick Rulea. And if you have questions for them, they can answer some of them. So what have we done since the last annual meeting? After receiving approval from USDA on our $12.2 million loan in December of 2016, we went out to bid for engineering design and construction management services for our infrastructure improvement project. Three firms submitted proposals, and after a thorough selection process, we selected MC Engineering by mid-June 2017. In late June 2017, the design phase began, which included surveying and the development of 30, 50, 90, and 100% construction plans and specs. System-wide modeling and the engineers had come up with an estimate for cost of construction. Bill Heinle, Sharon Tobias, Tom Schneider, and I reviewed the plans and specs as the process continued from 30 to 100%. MC was also doing internal review, correcting any errors to make the plans as detailed and correct as possible. Rick Rulea over there, along with Jose Diaz from MC Engineering, walked every lot on the project to determine new service box locations and marked each one with a stake. They took pictures and developed maps of each lot for mailing out to each homeowner affected to get their input on the location. We plan to go over all these locations again, make sure all the stakes are in the right place, and there's still time if any of you need to talk about the location of your new service box, contact us, and we can make the change for you, or we'll at least talk about it and we can meet with you. Okay, then we had our bid opening. Wait a minute, sorry. Jumped ahead here. Yeah. We advertised for bids in March 2018. Had a pre-bid meeting on April 26th. Six contractors came and listened to a detailed presentation by John Pedry over there describing our project. John's knowledge of construction methods and parts and detailed plans left very few questions during and after the meeting. We then took the contractors on a tour of the subdivision. Bill had to dig up several areas to show the builders some of the work they would be doing. That was a very good meeting, and I think a lot of detail was presented to those contractors, which makes for a really good bid because they don't have to keep coming back and asking, well, what did you mean by that? What did you look at these plans? They're not clear. But I think the MC did a great job on that. We had a bid opening on May 30th. Two construction companies bid on our project, Sierra Mountain Construction, Inc. and Mazingo Construction, Inc. Mazingo was the apparent low bidder. Their bid was under our target number quite a bit, so the entire project can be built without deducting any part of it. After a 2 to 3 week vetting process, as Bob mentioned, we'll make sure the selected contractor complies with USDA conditions. We will issue a notice to proceed with full construction starting in late June, early July. I will talk more about the construction project after a little bit later. But also, in spite of all this that was going on, we also had a lot of dead trees out there. And a lot of action was going on. Last June and ongoing, we had extensive tree removal going on with several contractors cutting, stacking, and removing dead trees all over the subdivision. Bill and crew worked very hard marking water lines and talking to contractors to avoid water line breakage due to trees falling on our water lines and interrupting water service. We did have several line breaks due to falling trees, but close coordination between the water company and PG&E and their crews prevented much more damage. We also completed phase two of our meter replacement program, replacing 205 manual read meters with new radio read meters. And also we upgraded our treatment plant with 8-inch butterfly valves. These are the valves inside the plant that control the water flow through it. They're getting pretty old and we replaced those. So I think we've accomplished a lot since last June, and I'm proud of the work that our team, the office, field crew, LRPC, Tom Schneider, Sharon Tobias, and MC Engineering have done. So now I will introduce Lee Bateman, our treasurer.
Good morning. I'm going to report to you on really two items. The first one is a result of the USGA loan. We are required to have an audit of our financial status, our books, our procedures. In the past, we've had a review, which is what was legally required. We had that audit this last year. We hired Atherton and Associates to do that audit. They completed it. And it's about a 30-page document. If any of you want to read the entire document, you can contact the office, and the office will be happy to provide you with a full copy. The most important piece of information for me, and I think for you in that audit report, is as follows. In our opinion, meaning in the auditor's opinion, the financial statements referred to above present fairly, in all material respects, the financial positions of the Bulleck Springs Mutual Water Company as of December 31st, 2017, and then there's some information that's not relevant, in accordance with accounting principles generally accepted in the United States of America. That means you can trust the financial statements that we publish, that they do in fact accurately represent what's going on. And in the past, I'm sure all of you are aware of circumstances that have occurred in which those financial statements, not ours, other major companies that had investors, those financial statements were not accurate, but people behaved as if they are. This is an audit firm telling you our financial statements are legitimate, accurate, and our operating procedures in the office protect the operations of the company, meaning the handling of cash, paying of bills, that sort of thing. The other thing I'll report to you is our financial status as of the end of 2017 and the comparison to 2016, and I'm going to round the numbers a little bit. Our revenue and expense in 2017 was $1,600,000. That was approximately $24,000 more than the prior year. Our expense was $1,220,000, which was $37,000 less than the prior year. The difference was approximately $380,000. In 2017, the difference was $380,000. That was $61,000 more than the prior year. Our assets as of December were $7.2 million. That was $600,000 more than the prior year. Our liabilities were $295,000. That was $272,000 more than the prior year. Our shareholders' equity was $6.9 million, or about $330,000 more than the prior year. And liabilities and shareholders' equity equal assets.
We have a couple of late arrivals on the board. I'd like to introduce them to you. Paul Penny. Paul comes from the water business. He was with the Santa Clara Valley Water District for 35-plus years, and he's a chemist. His background is in chemistry and microbiology, if you have a question for him. I don't think so. Also like to introduce Dave Owen. Dave Owen has been on the board for 21 years, spent 34 years working for East Bay Municipal Utility District in the Bay Area. Today's his last board meeting, and he's retiring. So we wanted to think of something appropriate. So we got him a little award. The Order of the Rusty Faucet. Dave Owen? A speech is not necessary. Thank you very much for your 21 years. Next up, to explain where we're going in the future and how we're going to get there is Tom Snyder. Lee was just talking about money. I want you to keep a little number in mind. When you look at our rate increases, where it's 2%, 3%, or 4%, or whatever it's going to be, 1% is $16,000. So you divide that by 12 months, it's not a lot, is it? Just something to think about. We all hear about rate increases, and this water company's doing that, and some other water company's doing something. It's nice to talk about that, but we're the ones that have to pay our bills. And we're trying to, it is our goal, we're trying to keep any rate increase, proposed or otherwise, at a minimum. And to that, I'd like to reintroduce Tom Snyder.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
So, I have a tendency to present a lot of detail in my presentation, so bear with me. I'll try to get through it as quickly as I can. If you want to see all the information that I'm going to talk to, it'll be posted on the website, and I'm open to anybody calling the office and either contacting me by email or by phone, and I'll be happy to talk to you about any questions. So at first, in case there's any new shareholders, I just wanted to remind everybody what the Long Range Planning Committee is. We were formed in July of 2013 at the request of Bob and the Board of Directors. Our committee currently consists of four members. Two are on the board, that's Sharon Tobias and Andy Rich, and two are non-board members, Joe Morgan and myself. And we meet separately from the board of director meetings, and typically it's about once a month, and we'll meet more often as required when there's more activities going on. Our charter is to serve as an advisory committee to the board and provide ongoing recommendations for long-term water supply and demand management strategies that require a dependable and high-quality water supply at the most affordable cost price possible. In addition, the Long Range Planning Committee has a charter. We have rate structure goals, operational goals, financial goals, communication goals, which provide the basis for all of our decisions and the recommendations that we propose to the board. So we will discuss items for the long term in our committee meetings and bring those forward as recommendations to the board. And the board then discusses them and decides whether or not to move forward as it was proposed, make changes, and so forth. our primary focus over the last year has been, as mentioned previously, a large part of it was to provide technical and budgetary oversight assistance to the Blue Lake Springs management and staff and the MCE engineering firm on the USDA water project. Another area was focused on formulating and providing a recommended multi-year cash flow analysis, which included rate structure and contingency reserves. We also have been on an ongoing basis for the last couple years conducting a water meter usage study. And so we've got data for the started in 2016, continued all the way through last year, and will continue throughout this year. We'll continue to measure usage levels at different tiers and evaluate trends over time, which will be the basis for future rate structure decisions that the board will make. So just a little bit more of a summary over the activities over the last 12 months. I think in June of last year, I think Dave mentioned that we went through a selection process to determine who our engineering firm would be. Through that process, we selected MC Engineering. They've done a great job, and they will continue throughout the construction project doing the construction management for us. In November, the USDA notified us that we'd be required to fund the project using interim financing through the whole construction period, as opposed in the beginning, the whole thought process and agreement with USDA was that they would fund our costs starting at the beginning of construction, directly as they were incurred. As a result, in the February-March timeframe, the Long Range Planning Committee assisted in the interim loan application and approval process with CoBank. On an ongoing basis, we've been assisting the Blue Lake Springs management and staff in the cost schedule and technical oversight of the engineering services contract and meeting requirements of the USDA letter of conditions and loan process. This required a significant amount of coordination as the design evolved over the last year to make sure that we were meeting the system requirements without over-designing and at a cost that was within the USDA funding. As we approached the final design, much effort was required to ensure that the final drawings and specs and quantities were as accurate as possible for the construction bidding process. Over the past 3 months, the efforts have been focused on formulating the recommended 2018 through 2021 cash flow and water rates analysis for board consideration. Based on the documented assumptions in that analysis, it provides a forecast of revenues, expenses, and reserves, including all the requirements of the USDA loan and interim financing, along with the rate structure approach. So during the last year, there's been a huge amount of effort and a lot of coordination that was required. And I want to just take a second to recognize Dave and his field staff and his office staff for the great coordination and meeting all the requirements of the inputs that were required, not only for the MC Engineering efforts, but the CoBank, USDA letter of conditions, and the annual audit that Lee mentioned earlier. There was a heck of a lot of coordination that was required, and we all heard from every one of these other companies positive feedback. So they did a great job. Next topic I'm going to talk about is the USDA loan timeline and repayment process. As mentioned, in December 2016, we locked in the funding cap of roughly $12.2 million at a low interest rate of 1.875 over 40 years. Based on the current schedule, the loan payments are estimated to start approximately December 2020, which is 1 year after the estimated completion of the construction project. The annual loan payment will be $437,000, which comes out to $35.76 per $1,000 borrowed. Based on a breakdown of the project estimated cost and from the initial time of our preliminary engineering report to the time of our final designs, the breakdown between meters and infrastructure hasn't really changed that much. So it's for meters, it's approximately 12%, and the infrastructure portion is approximately 88% of the total funding. Based on that, the estimated annual loan for the meter portion will be roughly $49,000 a year, and the infrastructure portion will be about $388,000 a year. So starting in 2020, the loan surcharges will be included within the rate structure. For all the residents, the meter surcharge will be approximately $29 per year. For all the lots, that aren't combined lots, the rate surcharge will be $193 a year. So combined, the meter and infrastructure charge for a residence on a parcel will be around $222 a year. For combined lots, the infrastructure surcharge is estimated to be $48 a year, which is 25% of the lot charge, which the same structure that is used in our base rate structure. So what were the impacts due to the interim financing? Initially, the USDA loan process was for all funding and reimbursements to come directly from the USDA at the start of construction, which is estimated to be toward the end of June, beginning of July. The USDA loan payments would begin 1 year after start of construction, which would be roughly June of next year. So that's how it was. In November, when we received confirmation from the USDA that they're now requiring us to use interim financing to fund all the costs through construction, we had to basically redo our whole financials going forward. Based on that, we did a search of all the lenders and decided to obtain our interim loan through CoBank in the first quarter of this year. This results in the USDA funding and reimbursements to come from CoBank starting at the beginning of construction through the completion of construction. So roughly June of this year through December of next year. At the end of construction, the USDA will reimburse CoBank for all funded costs. This unexpected and unplanned requirement results in the added cost of a second lender to finance our project for the 18-month construction span. The interest estimate for this amounts to $70,000 for this year, and roughly $382,000 for next year, for a total of about $452,000 worth of interest. This interest expense is eligible for USDA reimbursement. However, we're going to wait until the end of construction to see if if USDA funds still remain. Based on the bidding process that we just went through and the bid that we received, hopefully we will have funds remaining to cover that interim financing. I'll talk a little bit about the cash flow and rate analysis that we've been going through. As I mentioned, it's an analysis that spans from this year, 2018, through 2021. We've provided a recommendation to the board that's going to be under consideration by the board for their decision going forward. The cash flow will be depend on many factors related to how the USDA construction project cost and schedule unfold over the next 18 months. The analysis is based on budgeted revenues and expenses for this year and forecasted revenues and expenses for 2019 through 2021, including all the impacts from the USDA loan and interim financing. For 2018, our beginning non-restricted cash reserves were at $729,000. In 2018, based on the budgeted income and expenses, we are estimating a positive cash flow in operating accounts of over $200,000 and a positive cash flow in USDA-related accounts of over $500,000. This is primarily due to the fact that all the engineering costs that started back in 2016, all the way up to the beginning of construction this month, will be reimbursed to us by the interim financing lender in the June or July timeframe. In 2019, cash flow is based on a long-range planning committee recommendation of 3.8% increase in base rates. We are forecasting a positive cash flow in operating accounts of about $378,000. However, a negative cash flow in USDA-related accounts of roughly $382,000, and that's due to the interest that we'll be paying next year on that interim loan. That combined brings the total forecast to a minor decrease in reserves of around $3,000. So, based on our analysis, at this point, the cash flow and reserves have been forecasted with Blue Lake Springs Mutual Water Company covering the interim loan interest payments within our analysis. As I mentioned earlier, this expense is USDA reimbursable, but that decision won't be made until the end of the project based on total costs and remaining funds. Beginning in 2020, the USDA loan payments and the required debt reserve and short-term asset reserve expenses will start. Therefore, the cash flow for 2020 and 2021 reflect the $437,000 USDA loan payment expense that I mentioned earlier, which will be covered by income from the previously mentioned shareholder annual surcharges. Those will be included within the annual base rate structure with no impact to cash or reserves. The operating account expenses have been forecasted with a conservative escalation factor. For this analysis, the recommended rate structure for 2020 and 2021 at this point provides for operating income that is basically equal to forecasted expenses with a very minimal positive cash flow. Based on the cash flow analysis, we have determined that it is possible to have 2021 reserves in excess of $1 million. Much will depend on the outcome of the USDA project and other potential reserve liens to be discussed by the Long Range Planning Committee and decided by the Board of Directors as we move forward. Based on the recommended cash flow analysis, it is possible for the annual base fees, including the shareholder USDA surcharges, to be comparable to prior years. The Long Range Planning Committee recommended rate structure will continue to be comprised of the annual base fees mentioned above and water usage or consumption fees for the usage above a to be determined monthly water allotment, each covering a yet to be determined percentage of our overall required revenues. Next area I just want to touch on is the water meter usage studies that we've been conducting over the last couple years. In 2016, if you take the total cubic feet of water used, it comes out to an average per residence of 302 cubic feet per month. So 2016 was a stage 2 drought action plan year. 2017, same analysis, the average per residence was 305. So it went from 302 to 305. 2017 was a stage 1 drought action plan. In 2017, our meter usage study sample size is averages 461 meters. And the average from our study came out to 309 cubic feet per month. So as you can see, they're all 302, 309 cubic feet per month. They're all pretty close. We're currently conducting a 2018 meter study, and the sample size is increasing from 461 last year up to about 529 this year. Data comparison shows that the January through April average for 2017 is at 207 cubic feet. The winter months, the average is always a lot less. So for 2017, it was at 207. 2018, the average for those first 4 months is at 199. Note that average usage rates for summer months are typically 2 times higher than the cooler, wetter months. So, I mentioned the analysis showed the averages were coming out 302 to 309. Our current base rate is based on 305 cubic feet per month. That comes within the base rate before shareholders are charged a usage fee. So just going over in a little more detail the 2017 data that we compiled for the during the study. The number of residents, this is based on, as I mentioned above, 461 meters. Those under our allotment of 350 cubic feet per month, there were 76% of the readings that were within that range over the year. Those 76% only used 27% of the water. If you look at what we've done is we've done it in a 4-tier analysis. The other 3 tiers that are above our base allotment were 24, the remaining 24% use 73% of the water. So there's a big difference there in those that stay within the allotment and those that go over it. Our largest tier is greater than 1,400 cubic feet, which is 4 times our allotment. So over the year, last year, of the meter readings we did, 4% were over that 1,400 cubic feet average per month, and on average they use 32% of the water. 4% using 32%. Trends show that usage levels can fluctuate substantially during the various months of the year. As examples, in February 2017, those that were within our threshold of 350 were 85% and use 48% of the water. So during those wet months, you're going to get a lot more residents staying within the threshold and using a lot more of the total water. In August, those within the threshold were down to 67% and used only 17% of the water. In contrast, in February, the heaviest users over the 1,400 cubic feet per month were only 1%, and they used only 14% of the water. But you get out into August, one of the summer months, those over 14 cubic feet per month were at 8% of the meter readings and used 44% of the total cubic feet. So you can see, as you go through the year, it varies quite a bit. And that's why we feel that these usage studies are going to become very key when we eventually determine the final rate structure for usage. So the water meter installations and usage rate structure. Currently we have 662 new radio read meters installed and connected. That leaves 1,049 meters remaining to be installed between now and 2020. The plan used in our cash flow analysis is to have 735 installed by the end of this year, 1,125 by the end of next year, and 100% of them installed by the end of 2020. Note that the ultimate meter installation timeline will depend on the selected contractor's construction sequencing plan and final schedule. So these were our estimates based on the data that we had going into construction, and we'll see how it pans out once we get the contractor scheduled. There are 976 residents that will require new service lines from their new meter location to the house. We are considering for residences to connect to their new meter within 6 months of the meter installation, and that's still up for discussion within the board. Water meter usage rates. As I mentioned, the current allotment that's included in the residence, the annual base rate, is 350 cubic feet per month, which equates to 2,618 gallons. Current meter rates are in excess of your allotment are $1.60 per 100 cubic feet. The long-range planning committee recommendation is to maintain the current metered usage rates while the remaining meters are being installed. During that period, results from our ongoing usage studies will continue to be analyzed. Another factor that can affect water usage is what's called price elasticity of water demand. The long-range planning committee recommends that we need to keep this information into our analysis along with our rate, the water usage rates that we come up with over the next year. Price elasticity of water demand, based on American Water Works Association studies, states that the omission of this in our rate analysis creates the potential for revenue shortfalls. Per the AWWA elasticity studies, using the most likely elasticity range for long-term residential demand, as an example, a 10% increase in water rates would be expected to produce a 3% reduction in water use. Based on analysis of our usage data and the demand factors, it will be determined if recommended changes to the monthly allotment or usage rates are in order. The goal is to develop and implement a water usage rate structure that continues to encourage strong conservation and adequate charges for the heavy users. Last topic I'll discuss is where we stand on our reserve accounts and the analysis that's been done there. The USDA has restricted reserve accounts which start in 2020. One is called a USDA debt reserve. That debt reserve is $44,000 per year for 10 years. So within the revenues we collect, we have to set aside $44,000 per year for 10 years. They also have a requirement for a short-term asset reserve. That is to maintain, based on the agreement that we have with the USDA, to maintain a $40,000 balance in that short-term asset reserve. A reserves policy to identify all internal reserve needs will be formulated over the next few months for board review and approval. The policy shall cover but not be limited to overall reserve objectives, definition of each reserve, process to determine the dollar value of each reserve, and a timeline for each. Based on discussions to date, additional reserves for consideration are a drought reserve, emergency fund reserve, long-term capital assets reserve, and bad debt reserve, which would cover delinquent fees. Based on the recommended cash flow analysis for 2018 through 2021, our current and forecasted internal reserve funds appear to be very healthy. However, we need to validate this by identifying the potential reserve liens through the reserve policy process that I just described. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Dave.
Okay, just... just want to talk a little bit more about the project and run down some information for you guys. I'm going to read a bunch of numbers off, but it'll kind of show you the amount, the enormity of it for us, you know. And so we're going to be putting in 65,505 linear feet of 8-inch, 6-inch, 4-inch, and 2-inch, and 1 1/4-inch water mains. We're going to put in 84 new fire hydrants and 25 fire hydrant replacements. Now, I don't know if you guys all know, but we had a fire yesterday over in Love Creek where they brought out, they had to bring the planes out. They brought out bulldozers. I don't know if they used them, but bulldozers, water tenders, everybody came out and they knocked it down, but it's just kind of a reiteration of the need we have here for new fire hydrants. We're also going to put in 969 new water services with boxes, meters. Some of them will be single connections and some will be double. 364 retrofit meters with boxes. And these are the previous projects that we've done. In the past, we haven't always made them uniform. We may have one box that connects two homes, or we'll have one box for each home. But we want to come in and have it all uniform, so we're going to be doing that. 15 large pressure reducing stations. And because we're in the hills here, we're going to have, you know, high and low pressures. We have to control that in the main so that we don't overpressurize everything. We're going to have a booster pump station over on Cypress Point. We already have one, but it's not been working for many years. We're going to replace that so that we can connect our two water tanks. We have one water tank up in Lilac Park, a 750,000 gallon tank, and we have one up here on El Ranchero, another 750,000 gallon tank. We'll be able to pump and move water between the two tanks if needed for fire flow. And we can also use it to mix water if we need to do that. We're going to put in 177 valves, 35 blow-offs, and 64 air reliefs. Not to mention the paving, we're going to have to do some of that. And we've also developed, MC in coordination with us, have developed a project sequencing plan. The contractor has to agree to this, and we're hoping we'll have some kind of sequencing plan so we can build part of the system and then have everyone connect. Well, we'll build it, and then we'll sanitize the pipes, and then we'll have everybody can start connecting to the new water services. Then we'll move on to the next. We'll move on to the next one, and instead of trying to build it all and then have everybody connect at once, we're trying to do it in a sequencing way. We'll find out more on that when we receive the contractor's construction schedule, which we don't have yet. Once we get that, we'll develop a detailed schedule of work to be performed where, with the cooperation of the contractor. We'll have notify the homeowners of location of work to be performed by the contractor. We'll put it on the web page. We'll have it. We'll use Nextdoor also. And if we have to mail out mailings, we'll do that. We'll include any road closures that might occur. We may have to do that on Moran and maybe on Blue Lake Springs Drive. We're trying to avoid that, but we may have to do some of that, but we'll have detours around it. We'll have any water shutoffs, water system shutdown. We don't anticipate too many of those, because we'll be connecting to the old water lines, hooking them up to the new ones, and we don't anticipate a lot of water outages for any length of time. But we will be notified. We'll notify you guys on those. Let's see. Advance notification to homeowners of authorization to proceed with the reconnection of water of the service line from the house to the newly constructed meter and meter box. Now, that's not everyone. It's only people in the project that are getting a line put in the street that previously was in the behind the house. And also on Helen, Don, and Marilyn, some of those lines in the street are too small, so we're going to put bigger lines and hydrants in there, and you will have to connect from your box that's in the front by the street to a new box that we will put in there next to it. This includes a small 3/4 inch pressure reducing valve, one of these. Some of you have them on your homes already, but it's basically required to have one on every house. And during construction of housing, most plumbers will put one of these pressure reducing valves on the house. Not every one of you guys has one, I know. So we are going to be supplying them to you when you reconnect to the new service box. We'll give you one of these, because basically we're not going to be putting them in at the water box in most cases. You can get a hold of us, and we give them to you free of charge. And the contractor will supply and install both the meter and meter box. There will be a required completion date for all homeowners' reconnections to allow the water company to convert from the old lines to the new. Because eventually we're going to be shutting them off, the old lines. But we're going to keep them hot until everyone's connected. So that's pretty much a rundown of it. And we're planning on having a more detailed meeting later in July, once we find out more about the construction schedule that we're going to have and the sequencing. So we'll look forward to doing that. And you can always call the office. There's still the a chance to change your new service box connection location. If you have a question on that, we have Rick here. He can help you with that. So that's all I have to say about it. Thank you.
Got all that down?
Sure.
That's a lot of information. You see, you get a sense of what we've been working on. Yeah, we're looking ahead 2 or 3 years. We're trying to keep cost containment is always an issue. Building strength into our reserve accounts is incredibly important. So when the project is over with, we have money in the bank. A couple of highlights. This is going to run 3 years at a minimum. If you read the news at all, the state of California is cranking up its focus, legislative focus, on the use of water and water companies reporting their use of water. And those reporting standards apply to all of us. Rick is where? Here. Slouching down, and he's the expert on where your meter box is going to go. And if you don't know, you ask him. If you're not sure, you want it moved, the stage is mitten, let us know. We're not going to move it after we put it in. That wouldn't make sense. I want to thank you for the work you've done in conservation. You ought to applaud yourself for it. We have some customers, about 4%, that are using in excess of somewhere between 700 and 1,000 gallons of water a day. Well, wait till the meter goes in.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a rude awakening for some. So thank you. I can't thank you enough for the effort of conservation. And as promised, I said we would have questions at the end, and now is the time. Yes, sir.
Hi, Charlie Juth, 712. I don't know if you've heard this morning, but I just heard it on the television. Governor Brown is putting in a water tax to assess wells or whatever water, and it's going to go about $10 a year or $10 a month. And it's a brand new tax. I don't know whether he's putting it through, or whether the legislature is putting it through, but it's going to attack whether the water quality that you're using is usable. And that's what it is. And other than that, I know nothing.
Okay, everybody here there? The governor's office. The governor mentioned that there's some sort of a tax going in. Michael, have you heard?
Explain that one a little bit more.
Sure. Nice question. We just happen to have an answer.
I won't go on a whole lot about it, but I'm glad you brought it up. It hasn't passed yet. It was introduced initially as SB 623, and it's since been folded into a budget trailer bill. But it is essentially a water tax, and the governor's not calling it that. But what it does is it forces water agencies to add a small tax onto each bill that the water agency will then send to Sacramento for them to use it to fund drinking water improvements in disadvantaged communities where there are problems getting reliable water supply they're having water quality issues. So a laudable goal to make sure everybody has clean water, but the tax portion of it, and this is the first time that water agencies have ever been required to impose a tax as sort of the go-between, and the money then gets sent to the state. So from, you know, this board hasn't taken a position on it, so I'm not going to advocate for a position on it one way or another, but I can tell you that the large water agencies and, you know, the Association of California Water Agencies and things like that have been fighting it tooth and nail. Not necessarily the goal of providing clean drinking water, but the problem of imposing a tax through water agencies and finding a different funding mechanism. So it's great that people are becoming aware of it. You know, feel free to contact me if you want more information about it. Contact your legislators, and hopefully we can find a different funding mechanism for that.
Jim.
As far as putting in new meters, are there going to be any costs to the homeowners for relocating meters, running lines into our homes from relocation of the pipes? Also, too, with CCWD, and I know we're not CCWD, but they have a tier level regarding water usage as far as full-time residents, part-time residents, and people that are, have vacation homes up here. Is that something we've looked into? And if I'm not mistaken, does CCWD get 400 gallons per month per user? That's what I sort of heard someplace. And we get approximately 350 gallons per month. So keep, those are just questions as far as...
Get rid of that because they don't have it.
Apples to apples, as far as if they're providing so much water per month, do we provide the same amount of water to our customers? Thank you.
Sure. Taking the last question first, it's measured in cubic feet.
A
cubic foot's about 7.5 gallons. That's one way to look at it. Why they use cubic feet, I don't know. Their threshold was 1,000, I think. They're arguing it about changing, and I don't know what the outcome is going to be.
No, they did change.
They did away with it.
They did away with it. I agree.
They're not charging for every drop.
We take into account. We take into account what you heard Tom talk about, water use, individual water use. The metering system we have, such as it is looking at part-time and full-time. About 12 to 15% of the entire system is full-time. We're trying to strike an appropriate balance. 350 cubic feet a month, it's about 80 gallons a day. That's not a lot of water. Toilet use is 6. That's one way to look at it. So we're going to be visiting that issue. You're not advocating this, but it's not like we're going to get into any kind of comparison.
No.
The comparison we'll use, and you're not saying that. I want to emphasize that the comparison we're using is our own and our own use. I drove up in the middle of the night last night, and I already forgot the other two questions, so you're going to have to help me out here.
As far as relocating of meters.
Oh, the relocating of meters.
As far as additional cost to the homeowner.
I have a meter, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I'm on the board. I paid for my own. I want to emphasize that for a reason. And if mine has to be moved, there could be some cost for me, even though I'm not moving it. The water company is, so they can twin up with my neighbor next door or something like that. I already have a lateral. That's a fancy term. It comes from the pipe out in the utility right away. And we have hydrants on our street. For those that have the backyard lines, past practice has been that we provide the new lateral, the new service in the front, a box, a meter, and the
PRV.
That's the power.
And the regulator. And you provide the rest. That's a standard practice in the water world. Now, I will tell you that if someone approaches the water company and says they've got an economic issue, they demonstrate to us that they cannot afford to have the work done, we will help them out. And there are people that can, in some cases, can't afford the water bill they have now. We understand that. We want to help it as best we can. And the other question, you had 3.
CCWD tier.
Did I get them all? Okay. We're watching. We watch what other water companies are doing. We belong to a couple of groups that gives us feedback on what the water world is trying things, what works and what doesn't, including the issue of water use. Consumption accountability, that is a big political issue in California. I think it exceeds everything else that we talk about, is where does the water come from, how do you deliver it, and where does it go? Ma'am, you had a question. Could you stand up, please? Thank you.
We are responsible then from the meter to the house. We have a list of contractors of people we can trust to
finish
off the system?
Yes. In the perfect world, and we've talked a lot about this, everyone heard the question about if we're going to require you to go from the meter to the house, do we have contractors that do the work? The answer is yes. They're licensed, bonded plumbers. Now, someone comes to your house and offers to do the work, and you say, are you bonded, and are you licensed? And they say, I'll get back to you. Don't use them. If you don't know who to use at all, we'll give you a list. We'll make recommendations, and we don't get anything for it. We do that now. Most of, and with probably no exception, the plumbers that we use are all bonded, licensed, and our staff will oversee the work they do. Every hookup that is going to be accomplished, and there are close to 1,000, we are going to stand and watch it, part of it, to make sure it complies with everything that we require. That's one reason we're going to this regulator valve, so everybody's got the same regulator valve. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have an estimate of the cost per foot?
About $15 a foot. Now, $15 a foot is in the perfect world where you're digging in soft dirt and there are no rocks. there are some things that we can assure with. There's some things that we can stand on, but we don't know where all the rocks are. And that reaches out to the work that the engineers have done in preparing the RFP that we went out on a bidding process, talking about what the countryside is like here. That's why we sought after someone to do this job that's had experience of doing work in lands like this. Yes, sir.
Bob Golovic, 811. My question is, will they be careful about gas lines and underground electrical lines, which right now is between my meter location, as indicated by your staff, and my incoming
sure. part of the house? Everybody hear the question? Okay. Are we sensitive to the issue of gas lines and electrical lines on your property? You bet. In fact, if we hit one, you'll know it.
I can elaborate a little bit on that.
Stand.
Okay. When the contractor begins work, he's going to call out a USA call. So all the electrical people, gas people, will have to mark anything that's the contractor will mark the line where he's going to be digging. Then they will mark their utilities. So the chances of having problems with that are smaller, but there's always a chance, but we're going to be as careful as we can on it.
We've done the same thing in working with the tree removal people of going out and showing them where the water lines are. The last thing you want to do is go through your electrical line. I don't want you celebrating your new water line in the dark.
Bob, can I add one more thing to that? I think the scenario you mentioned is the gas lines are in between the meter and the house. And if you're in that situation and you have to have a lateral relocated, that just reiterates why it's important to use a licensed and bonded plumber who knows to go through those steps. And if they don't go through those steps and they cause some damage, you have some recourse against a licensed and bonded plumber that you may not have against somebody who doesn't have those certifications. So that's just a reminder for why you should do that.
I have no objection. Sounds like your planning is very good.
Covered. You know, there are always surprises. In fact, we're planning for surprises. As strange as that may sound, we spend a lot of time, an inordinate amount of time, as the phrase goes, dotting I's and crossing T's. And we've exhaustively gone over the what-ifs and so forth. And we're not launching this thing, and I think you get a sense of it, where that kind of work has been undone. And we're bound to find something along the path here that we didn't think about. But we have a team that's flexible enough to come up with solutions as necessary. And you ought to feel, and I think you do, I think you feel comfortable with that. Yes, sir.
Mike McAtee, 379 unit 3. In the event that the new meter is going to be located close to the existing water box, will we be able to connect to our existing line from the box to the house, or do we have to run a new line?
Go ahead, Billy.
You can hook up to your existing lateral to your home from the old to the new. All you got to do is hook up to your old line. You do not have to to put a new line in at all. Okay. If you're comfortable with the existing line that you have.
Yeah, yeah, he'll be happy to do it.
Yeah.
Watch it.
Any other questions?
One quick one.
Michael?
Yeah, Mike Oliveira, and I don't know my lot number. I live on George Ave. Follow-up, Dave, on your USA markings for your existing utilities, will they come out and mark on private property?
Yes. I don't know. Ethan might know that.
Yes,
Evans
will.
Pass
they
will come out.
Yes.
Yeah, if you have underground from, say, you have AT&T line or electric line, they will mark through your private property.
Yes. They will go on the private property. That,
that question, by the way, has come up about do we have authority to go on people's property? And the answer is yes. There's a right of way. It's a legal matter, and if you want a legal answer, Mr. Minkler would be happy to do it. But yeah, we can go up. We can go where the water line is. That's part, you know, because that's we service that type of thing. Yes, sir.
Dale Ward, 661-5. I didn't understand the rates for an unimproved property versus an improved property versus part-time renter or full-time renter when it comes to the water meter and the usages. I've always been confused with the different tiers at that level, not including how much water usage you're using. We have an unimproved property and we pay the full rate for it and the full rate for our existing property, our homeowners. And it sounded to me like initially I may be confused with what you said, that you're going to actually charge a meter fee for the unimproved property as long as is what it sounded like.
No.
And so if you could clarify that for me, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, it didn't sound right to me either. and you're not. Don't confuse it with, because some people do, with the homeowners association charges.
No, that's a whole different.
I say that in an upbeat. You pay for every share. You know, we all know that. If you have a dwelling on the property, there's a rate for that. In fact, there are a couple of them. One is with a meter and one is without. And there's some attachments thereof. If you have an unimproved lot or an empty lot, you pay the access, you pay the base rate. Now, will those rates change in the future? You bet. Because all the rates do.
The thing in the past that bothered me is it seemed to get the base rate was the same for both.
No.
The downtown. Yeah, if you carve up. Right now, we have one rate that has pieces to it. In a couple of years, we'll have one rate that'll have two parts. A base rate, it'll be called something, perhaps that, and a consumption rate based on usage. In the perfect world, the base rate pays for the care and maintenance of the company, pays for everything. So the consumption rate is money we put into our reserves, conceivably. What people question is why they're paying something for an empty piece of land. Well, there's a way to change that. This isn't the moment to do it. But we're kind of tied to it because it has to do with shares and the base rate you pay for a share. I'm sure it was a great idea in 1960. This isn't 1960, so yeah, you have to trust us on this one. It's going to work out. Yes, sir. And I hope I answered that. That didn't sound like I did, but it sounded like I knew what I was talking about.
I think you were talking about the surcharge. Since you could
the same. Surcharge would be the same.
Surcharge would be the same whether there's a house on it or not. But then there's an additional meter surcharge if you have a house.
But not if you have a box. There's always been boxes and tiers where it's part-time or a rental or whatever. I never understood that because if you're part-time, they seem to charge us more because we had a vacation rental, and yet permanent residents, which are going to be using more water because they're going to be here all the time, actually got a better rate.
We've consolidated those. There used to be about 8 of those, like you're saying, with the vacation rentals and the part-times. We've consolidated that down to cabins with meters, lots, and combined lots. So a lot of the, hopefully, that answers your question.
We've compressed those rates a lot. We inherited them. You don't want to inherit stuff like that. Believe me. Yes, sir.
Cliff Larrabee, 78-1. So, you're going to install a new system with a box and a meter for each resident. Is it going to be the resident's responsibility to connect from their existing line to the new box? Or will you guys do that?
The water company's responsibility is to get water to your property.
Okay.
And if you have a backline access now, we're going to be installing off a main that runs through the utility right-of-way in front of your home, wherever that is.
Mine's in the front.
And we put in what's called a lateral, which is a fancy word from a connection to the main to the meter box. We put in a meter and a regulator, and from that point to the house is the homeowner's responsibility.
Okay, that was my question.
Yes.
You're just going to leave the existing system in place. You're going to put a new box in, and then it's going to be my responsibility to connect to that new system.
Right, and we'll work with you. The demand for the plumbers and have this work done will not all occur at the same time because this is a rolling project. It's going neighborhood by neighborhood by neighborhood. So in the perfect world, when your turn comes up, the plumbers, I believe, already had some experience in doing this. Most of them already have, and so they've given us an approximate price on it. And all you have to do is line one up to get the work done. Meanwhile, the water is still going into your house. It's still live. Once you make the new connection and you, in essence, abandon the backyard access, we're going to come in and remove it.
Yeah. No, mine's in the front. It's through the street, so that's not a problem there.
Thanks. Sure.
When in the perfect world, when you're all done, you're going to remove the old line, the old...
We'll do that as the project. Go ahead.
Well, what we're going to do, we'll abandon in place. We'll remove the old services and the water boxes that were existing there. And then we'll abandon the lines in the ground in place in the utilities that exist. We're not going to go in and dig up ground and dig up old pipes.
The old abandoned line that bites the contractor?
Well, the line abandonment that's going to happen is ours, yours, the water companies, but we'll remove the services and everything so there's nothing visible. Okay. But the pipes will be abandoned in the ground.
Okay. What kind of a time frame do you think there's going to be from the installation of the new system to the shutting down of the old system?
I think we discussed 6 months. Once you give them the okay to hook up to your new meter, you'll have a 6-month time frame, which was discussed, to do so.
We used to have a year. You know, guess what? Yeah. People wait a year. Now we want to get it in and get it over. Yes, ma'am.
When I was here last year, you said that we would pay for the installation of the water line, and we would then be reimbursed from you, and you had a big loan for this. Is that still standing?
I sure hope so. The any type of reimbursement, and we've been arguing about it a lot at the board level, will occur, but it will not occur while the project is going on because we have to maintain our reserves should something come up that we have not anticipated. The stronger our reserve commitment at the end of the project will answer your question. Last year, last November, I talked about it, but I think the water company's responsibilities, if we're making you move your service, then we should help you financially with that. And it would still be my intention, I'm one of seven that thinks we should have that. But I can tell you, nothing will happen until the project's over with, of that nature. So it goes back to the patience and bear with us. It's going to occur, but it's about 3 years out. Yes, sir.
Hi, you know, this is a pretty sophisticated project as such, and I don't know if you've introduced John's MC Engineering's experience in doing the same kind of work.
I haven't, but I could certainly do so.
When John could
speak to you've all met John Pedry. John is with MC Engineering. He does this kind of stuff in his sleep. And he's been working with us now for 2 years, 3 years, 2.5 years. He's had experience with our chosen vendor, our contractor, on a project that's much larger than what we're doing. He's very satisfied with the work they have done. And John, you have the floor if you want to comment on.
I kind of cut my teeth in at Tuolumne County. I was with the Water District in Tuolumne Regional Water District. I was a young engineer doing projects. So I'm very familiar with the foothills, the rocks, like Bob mentioned, and other things you don't see in the ground. So my whole life's been buried pretty much. So I do have a lot of experience with foothills and Shasta County, which is a very similar type of soil, a lot of rocks, a lot of issues that you have to deal with. And more recently in City of Lincoln. There the soil's a little bit different. A lot of groundwater, a lot of moving sands and things, so we had to deal with a different type of structure. The majority of this project will be fairly simple because it will be within the right-of-way and along the edge of pavement. So everything we tried to do in this project is to make it cost-effective, try to stay out of the pavement if we can and use the shoulder. So we spent a lot of time walking the system, looking at the pipeline locations, trying to simplify. But again, you never know when you hit some rock along the way. So we had the geotechnical report performed by a local geologist. So we have some good data on the soil structure. I do have some experience, and I know Rick has quite a bit of experience in installing meters. He just got done with
San Bruno, Hillsboro, Livermore.
And Livermore. You work in Riverside County, currently. So we have a lot of meter installation experience, which will be another aspect of this project, is getting that meter located correctly, getting the service line in. We'll have some telephone poles that may be in the way. We're going to try to avoid taking any trees out. That's something to look at. We don't want to take trees out. One other note, we'll have about 15 to 16 temporary easements. So some of you may be in an area where we have to run a line kind of cross-country, where we may need to pick up some additional room to work with the contractor on. Typically a 10-foot wide easement's not enough to run a pipeline, so we'll need a 25 to 50-foot working easement. So we're working on a group of easements that we'll be putting together and going to the homeowners that are affected by those easements and asking them to sign a hold harmless clause. We'll hold you harmless for any damages to allow us to work kind of a little bit outside the easement. And I don't see a lot of those. I know I'm working with Mike and the attorney in getting the easement documents drawn up. So you'll see some easements, but very few.
There you go. Hey. Yes, sir.
I'm Roger Kraft, 6335. I have a question on how the drops were selected. In a cul-de-sac, and in most cases, these houses were dropped one drop between the houses, and it's on the opposite side of my service that comes up from the rear today, which you got my attention at $15 a foot. We're talking some significant dollars to hook up here. So we had asked for that to be changed. We talked to the water company several times. But when I live in Arizona now, I'm only here for 6 weeks out of the year. And when we came up, the stake was still between the two houses, the opposite side on both houses to where the input service should come into the houses. So the importance of how it was selected, it looks like it was more for the vendor than it was for the housing owner.
Okay.
I'd like to have that changed, so we will be talking to the
gentleman. Yeah, it's right. They've got a layout of your property here.
And what I'm looking at is there going to be argument because I want my cost reduced because of the distance?
Well, absolutely.
Okay.
Sure.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's not our goal to jack the cost up, believe me. I appreciate you bringing that up. Yes, sir.
One final question. On my lot, I know where the meter is being placed in the flag. Perfectly okay. There's a new stake in front of my house, a red stake. Does anybody know what that is? Is there a culvert there?
It's a fire hydrant or a regulator.
Yeah, it's a fire hydrant. Congratulations.
That'll take care of insurance.
get down to your insurance. You want to tell your insurance company, by the way.
That's right.
For the ones that are starting to walk away, that you have a hydrant nearby. Yes, ma'am.
11411 Maryland Butera. So once we have to do a trench. So once the new meter is in place, then we engage the contractor to create the trench.
That's what I would do. Yes.
Okay. And if the meter is going to service two properties, is there one trench? Both lines come through that one trench?
Yes, you can do that.
Yeah. George trench.
Is that preferred?
It's preferred for you guys.
Of course, from a cost, yeah. But is it preferred?
We have no problem
between
with
you and your name.
Yeah.
Okay. Work out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we plotted those out as well.
Thank you.
Other questions? Yes, sir.
Rich Peter, 373.
A little louder, Ivan.
Bob, you had mentioned that there, or maybe it was Dave, that there'd be some painting necessary, and John just mentioned that most of the work, we're going to try to stay on the shoulder in the dirt, but that brought the question of crossing driveways. Are you going to use trenchless and you have to paint under the driveway? Or are you going to repave our little 2 feet or 3 foot wide trench and driveway, or is that what you're referring to the paving?
Let me just say the trench width is 18 inches, so we're trying to keep the footprint as narrow as possible. They will saw cut, and yeah, we will have to cut some driveways. There's no question about that. The contractor can use trenchless. It's up to him. We did specify trenchless, so he can either go trenchless or saw cut it. So he has that option. And then that trench will go back the way it was, compacted 95%, so we don't see hopefully any of these little sags that show up over time. So we'll work with the contractor very closely on those driveways. And there's quite a few of them. We did note that.
But it won't be the homeowner's cost to repair.
No, it will not. No, it will not. That's strictly on the contractor.
John? Did you have a question? No?
Michael.
Just waving? Hi. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Bob, one quick question. Seeing that you're going to have relocation of lines on the private properties by the private homeowners, are any permits required?
No.
No.
There's no permits required by the contractor to do the plumbing work to hook up?
No.
I'll make sure the public understands that.
Yeah, we've already talked to the council about it.
Good.
Any other questions? Well, I thank you for your patience, your indulgence, and looking forward as you are, I can tell you that this system is going to be available to our grandchildren's grandchildren. We are completely replacing a system that is almost 60 years old, and I can guarantee it's going to be something you'll be proud of. And thank you so much for coming this morning.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.